Okay, good afternoon, everyone. We're looking at Mizmor Pei Bet, the Mizmor for Tuesdays. Almost as good a Mizmor as we're going to get in this section in terms of familiarity and recency. Everyone just took a look at it now, but before we start, are there any obvious problems or questions, things that come up from just a quick skim of the Mizmor that you think we have to make sure to touch on? Some of them we might, some of them we'll may have to pass on. Taking a second just to quickly brush up on some of the details.
Is there a Asaf to those gathered?
Okay, good. So, right, the name Asaf, right, so Asaf does have the connotation of gathering together. It seems like Asaf is a name in this context. Okay. He appears, I think, in either in Shmuel or Divrei Hayamim as one of David's musicians. I wouldn't be surprised if it was both, but I didn't want to say for sure. I couldn't remember a specific pasuk. This is part of a series of Mizmorei Asaf also. There are several Mizmorim called Mizmor Asaf and Sefer Tehillim. Okay, so in the absence of any burning questions, I don't think there are any obvious puzzles in this Mizmor, but I do think there will be some driving themes, as there usually are. Let's start by just looking at some of the literature about why this is the Shir Shel Yom Tov for this day. And then start tackling the Mizmor itself, and we'll see if there are any themes we notice that may fit together well with those themes. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, in explaining why the Mizmor is chosen for this day, Bashlishi hayu omrim Elokim nitzav ba'adat kel, al shem shegila eretz bechachmato, he revealed the earth in his wisdom, ve'yichin tevel la'adato, and he prepared the earth for his congregation, for his assembly, whatever an da exactly is. That's not, obviously helpful, right, on the surface. Even just the words here, gila eretz l'chachmato, hichin tevel adato, are more reminiscent of Mizmor Chaf Gimel. L'ashem ha'aretz umloa tevel v'yoshveva. We already used that language, and we did it for 2 days ago. There's no obvious reference to chachma here. There might be, implicit chachma, assumed, and we'll touch on that as we go through the Mizmor. And the only obvious connection in this sentence is La'adato, his congregation, because in the first pasuk, Elokim nitzav ba'adat kel, in his group, in his congregation, and this is the day when the earth was created on which human beings would dwell, and so it's the appropriate choice for today. So if it's still a little bit lacking, right? I did a search in a concordance. I think the word Eretz appears in Sefer Tehillim about 190 times. We could have found a Mizmor that includes a little bit more emphasis on that theme of Eretz than we may find here. It does appear here in Pasuk Hey, but it's not so prevalent in your face that the point is to talk about the earth. So we have a couple of explanations offered by Rishonim, and then we'll see one later by an Achron that I think is perhaps a little stronger. Rashi suggests Makom Matzav Adato, right? What's the point of Gila Aretz? Meaning it's the place where his congregation would stand. Shene'amar Batere'eha Yabesha, which appears in day 3 of creation, the earth will appear, which is the place where humans will dwell. And he adds to the word Eda, which was in the first pasuk, also the word Matzav, the place where they would stand. So Elokim Mitzav Adat Kel, he stands together with us on earth. A little better, but basically the same theme, kind of harping on more of the creation language, but specifically with a focus on the earth and not on the creation of everything. Okay, there is what to say about that, and again, Eretz does appear in Pasuk Hey as well. Rabbi Yochanan was a little bit more interesting. He reads it maybe not exactly kipshuto, but I think in a way that is definitely resonant. So he introduces the section of the Gemara, and he quotes the relevant psukim. And then if we go to the last two words on the first line, Ve'echino la'adato, he created the earth for his congregation, Shekiblu mishpatav, who accepted his laws, his mishpatim. Kidechtiv, and this is the pasuk, wanted to say in Yirmiyahu, but I may have just made a mistake about that. Im lo briti yomam v'layla, chukot shamayim v'aretz lo samti. And he's going to explain this pasuk. So I'm not going to try translating it because he's going to translate it very particularly. Pierce, what does it mean? Ilule Yisrael shekiblu briti lahagot ba'yoma v'layla. if not for my covenant, meaning if my covenant was not accepted by Bnei Israel, who in turn would learn it day and night, that's Yomam Valayla in that Pasuk, then Lo Samti Shemayim Baaretz. I would not have created the world were it not for the eventual acceptance of the Torah by Bnei Israel. So the emphasis for Rabbi Yochanan on the Mizmor is knowledge and study of Torah. The knowledge and study of Torah is foundational to the existence of the world, or essential to why the world should even exist. And so when we talk about the creation of the earth, we're really talking about the purpose that the earth was created for, which is the knowledge of Mishpatim, of God's laws, which is what we're alluding to throughout the Mizmor. So for Rabbi Yochanan, the point of the Mizmor is to focus on knowledge of Torah, knowledge of Hashem's laws. It explains a little bit that word chachma, right? Gilayas b'chachmato, his wisdom, his Torah was necessary for the foundation of the world. It's also a little bit reminiscent of a Mishnah in Avot. It's one of the first Mishnayot. Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed, al Torah v'al ha'avod v'al gemud chasadim. So he's putting a dagesh chazak in that first word, really emphasizing that. But the world wouldn't exist were it not for Torah, and so we say on the third day to justify the creation and the existence of the world. So we'll take a look at the Mizmor now and see whether Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation is really defensible. But I think he's not misunderstanding, but he's understanding the word Mishpat here in a way that I don't think is the simplest way to read this Mizmor. He seems to think Mishpat means the laws of the Torah, but I actually think we're talking more about a sense of justice, a sense of fairness. We're talking about judges who are ruling as opposed to Mishpatim, like following the laws of the Torah. And there are big differences between those two. He is right that Mishpat is a major theme here. The Shoresh, Shin Pei Tet, in this Mizmor appears four times in Pasuk Aleph, Bet, Gimel, and then all the way at the end in Pasuk Chet. So we'll start from the beginning. Mizmor La'asaf, Elokim Nitzav Ba'adat Kel, Bekerv Elokim Yishput, then Admatai Tishbetu Avel, Ibnei Rishim Tisusela, Shiftu Dalviatom, Aniv Rashal Stiku. We're reminded over and over of judgment. And then at the very end, sort of tefillah, as many of the Rishonim refer to it, Kuma Elokim, Hashem, stand, Shaftah Ha'aretz, judge the earth, Ki Etat Nechah B'chol Hagoyim. So we have Mishpat and we have Eretz, but I think Mishpat, we're focusing a little bit more on ideas of justice and a little bit less on ideas of Torah study. And I think that'll become very clear as we start breaking down Pasuk by Pasuk here. So let's start in the beginning. Elokim Nitzav Ba'adat Kel, Bekerv Elokim Yishpot. The word Elokim here appears twice in this first pasuk, two more times later in the Mizmor, and the word Kel as well. I'm being perhaps imprecise in my pronunciation of those words. Because usually when I say the word Elokim and I refer to God, so I should say Elokim, but there are other connotations of the word Elokim that we'll get to soon that might not require that translation. Here it's almost a little bit gibberish to assume that they're all referring to God, right? God stands in the congregation of God, and amongst God he judges. Right? Like if there's one God, which we assume there is, so what does it mean to be in the congregation of God? And what does it mean to judge amongst God, if you yourself are God? It's a little bit puzzling. So most of the Rishonim assume that at least one of these Elokims doesn't refer to God, but it's another name for judges. For Shoftim, which are sometimes referred to as Elohim, or as I should say, Elohim, because I'm not referring to God here, so I could say the word properly. Source number 5 on page 2 quotes, you know, one pasuk is Sefer Shmot, there, I could have used the pasuk before as well. It's talking about, Lahalacha, we understand this to be talking about a guardian, someone who's watching something for you, and claims that it was stolen, but in reality he took it for himself, and eventually it's discovered that he took it, it was not stolen, and the halacha is he is supposed to pay kefil, he pays double the value of the object he tried to keep from you. But as part of the description there, the Torah says, Al kol dvar pesha, al shor, al samor, al sa, al salma, al kol avida, asher yomar ki hu zeh, regarding any physical thing, that animals, or kalim, or clothing, whatever it is that you're claiming to have lost, ad ha Elohim yavo dvar shnehem, until the Elohim, should their matter go, and the one that the Elohim decides is the wicked one, meaning that they rule to be wicked, then he should pay the double value to his fellow. And I could have quoted Rashi on this pasuk. The halacha generally assumes like this. But he chose Unklos, which is the Aramaic translation. Unklos is usually a pretty faithful translation to the simple meaning of the Hebrew, but he'll make certain changes in light of the proper halachic interpretation of the text. So here, instead of saying something like, you know, Elokaya, to translate the word Elohim, he says, if you look at the bolded words in Unklos in source 6, Nikdam Dayanaya, the Dayanim, the judges, are the ones you go to, and the judges decide who has to pay, who's responsible for this object. And so, most Rishonim understand that the second Elohim in this pasuk, Bekerav Elohim Yishpo, means among the judges. In other words, you have to imagine this picture. Right? There are judges, they're sitting together, you know, maybe a group of three as a Beit Din, and God is, so to speak, among them, and he is perhaps involved in their judicial process. Bekerav Elohim Yishpo, he is judging them. I may have lost my... Oh, the recording's still here. Excellent. He may be judging among them. He may be participating in the judicial process. Or maybe a little bit more negatively, he may be judging the judges. In other words, he's among the judges, watching how they're doing, and concluding they're not doing very well. Ad matai tishpetu avel ufnei reshaim tisuzela. How long will you judges judge wickedly? And will you honor the faces of the wicked, of the Rishayim. Right? So God is among you, watching you judge. The judges are failing miserably, and God is complaining. I'll admit it's not exactly clear who's speaking in Pasuk Bet. Some readers think that it's the poet who's sort of addressing the judges, but the Malbim very creatively suggests that it's almost like a moral voice. Right? God, so to speak, is among you, and you know, from inside, from your conscience, is communicating to you as well. So it's not an external critique of the judges, but it's giving voice to your internal sense of right and wrong. The judges should feel that I'm judging poorly, I'm judging incorrectly, and that there's some aspect of my job that I'm not fulfilling properly. What is that job? So there are two psukim that seem to have, I think, slightly different emphases. Shiftu dal v'yatom, judge the poor and the orphan. Ani varash hatzdiku, the poor and the afflicted, shall you vindicate. Hatzdik is a word in biblical Hebrew that generally connotes finding righteous in judgment, meaning judge them positively. Then in Pasuk Dalet is something that feels a little bit different. Palatu dal ve'avion, I think save or rescue the poor and the afflicted or the indigent. Miyad reshaim hatzilu, save them from the hands of the wicked. Right? As opposed to what you were doing before, which is honoring the wicked and giving them the upper hand, you should save them from the wicked. I think there's a major difference in connotation here. Right? In the first pasuk, we're talking about justice in maybe its fairest sense. You judge them. The Yalkut Shimoni, I think I brought a source number 8. We'll skip 7. We'll come back to it maybe a little bit later if we have time. This is a great makor. It's an anti-Robin Hood kind of source. Shiftu dal v'yatom ani varash hatzdiku. It doesn't say Tirachamu eno omer, ela hatzdiku. It doesn't say be merciful to them, it says be just and fair to them. Hatzdiku ala vatadin, lo bishvil shihu ani, titolu mishal asher vetitnu la. Don't take from the rich and give to the poor. That's not what I mean by vindicate the poor. I don't mean give them a positive judgment even if they deserve a negative one. Poor people can do bad things too. They could make legal mistakes and be in the wrong legally. And why? And it's very important for the Midrash to say this. Lama, why? L'Hashem ha'aretz u'mlawa. The world is Hashem's. Sheli ha'olam, v'ani amarti l'ha'ashiro, v'atem notlim et shalo. When a rich person is rich, this Midrash thinks, on some level they deserve it. Hashem caused them to be rich. So don't take it upon yourself to take from the rich and give to the poor. That's not what we mean when we say take care of the poor. We mean be fair to them. I think that works very well in Pasuk Gimel, but in Pasuk Dalet you get a different sense, right? Pal tu dal ve'avil mirar v'shakim hatzilu. There's more of a sense of saving them from affliction. So, if in Pasuk Gimel the idea is don't be corrupt, don't let bribery blind you to appropriate justice, in Pasuk Dalet we're almost leaving the judicial context entirely. We're not talking about judgment in the legal deliberative sense. We're talking about some kind of activism. To borrow a politically charged phrase that I think works well, even without all the political connotations, there's justice and there's social justice. I'm not talking about any particular agenda, but I'm saying there's a sense of justice in which you have to be involved and try to stop corruption in society at large, and not only in your courtroom. A judge who's fair in court but doesn't see protecting people in the world is missing something as part of their job. I think it alludes to a very... There's an allusion maybe to this theme also back in Pasuk Aleph. Elokim nitzav ba'adat kel. I didn't point this out in the first place, but the word Elokim nitzav ba'adat kel, the word nitzav has a connotation of standing. Right? Maseva, the standing pillar of stone. I was talking to Ryan Myers at the Academy this morning. He suggested that there's a sense of permanence in the idea of nitzav or maseva. In Parshat Nitzavim, we talk about Asem nitzavim hayom kulchem, and he thinks the connotation there is B'nai Yisrael, it's the end of the Torah, and you made it. You made it to your destination, you're about to enter Eretz Yisrael, you're nitzavim po. But I think there might be another connotation of the word nitzavim. Right? When you think of judges in the deliberative sense, usually they're sitting. Right? Moshe, for example, in Sefer Shemot, in source number 9, Vayeshev Moshe lishpot et ha'am. Moshe is sitting in judgment of the people. They come to him for deliberative judging. They want his analysis, they want his knowledge of Torah to answer legal questions in court. And there are several other places in the Tanakh where judges are seated as they judge. Halachically speaking, the judges need to be sitting in the Beit Din. Devorah and Sefer Shoftim also sits under the Alon, and she also judges there. Standing isn't usually associated with judges. But Professor Sarna, who's been very helpful for me in several of these shiurim, suggests that there's a different connotation, which is the connotation of taking action. Right, both at the beginning and at the end of the Mizmor, we have Elokim nitzav ba'adat kel, and at the end, kuma Elokim shafta ha'aretz. In both cases, we want him to stand up and do something already.
It's not that being was like more powerful than just standing. I mean, not like lamod is just to stand, but nitzav is like...
Right. So that was Rabbi Meyer's suggestion. And the word nitzav connotes like permanence and strength. You've made it here. And according to him, the point of the word nitzav was Hashem is always here. Hashem has a stake in this space. He doesn't happen to be in the room while the judges are judging. He belongs in this position, and he's really firmly planted here. There may be that connotation, I think, coupled with the connotation of action. That the point of standing is sitting is when I sit and think and I make decisions, and standing, which I'll do for dramatic effect, is when you go out to do something. And once you've stood, so we're asking Hashem to not only judge deliberatively, but also to take action and intervene in some way. And I think that might be what we're also asking the Shoftim to do. The Shoftim are meant to paltu dal ve'evyon, also engage in the kind of action to enforce your rulings in society and maybe take other action to protect the weak. And that kind of activity is another essential part of justice, besides the more analytic piece and just judging fairly and honestly. With that, we move to the second half of the Mizmor, starting from Pasuk Hey. We're not telling the judges what they need to be doing. We're describing the failure of the judges to do that. And again, it's also maybe the conscience of the judges, the voice of Hashem speaking from within them or to them, depending exactly how you read the voice of this Mizmor. Lo yad'u velo yavinu. They did not know nor understand. B'chashecha yitalachu. They wander in darkness. Yimotu kol moste aret. They don't understand. They walk in darkness. They can't see clearly or understand things. And therefore, the foundations of the earth are shaking. They are not as stable as they could be. To come back to that line at the end, that's going to be important. It's another place where Eretz comes in here. So what failure of the judges are we talking about? I think there are probably two possibilities, right? One could be a moral failure. They blinded themselves, so to speak, to the truth. This works very well with Malden's theory, that they're hearing a voice of conscience, or they should be hearing a voice of conscience, telling them how to behave properly, but they're blinding themselves to that. If we go to the pasuk, Ki ashocha v'averini tzadikim v'slev tibrei chachamim v'slev tibrei tzadikim, I'm sorry. So the connotation is, you've corrupted yourselves, you've blinded yourselves to the truth. You know what you should do, and you're failing to do so properly. And it's just another way of hammering home the fact that they're so negligent in their responsibility to the people that they're judging, to the communities that they're trying to serve. Meiri has a slightly different take. In source number 10 here, he suggests, V'achar shidiver al shoftim hamatim at adin l'sibat hayotam mehadrim menosim pnei rishayim. First he talked to the judges whose failure lied in the fact that they were influenced by the wicked. Now we're talking about another failure of judges. Diber al min acher min ha-shoftim v'hu kishu yitmanu shoftim b'li yod'im darchei ha-mishpat. Just intellectual failings. Some judges know how to judge well, and the reason that they judge badly is because they're corrupt and wicked. Another problem could just be lack of information, lack of knowledge, right? If we're talking about, you know, halacha for a second, you know, making basic mistakes on halachic rulings, you have incredibly serious consequences. So knowing what you're doing, knowing how to judge fairly and how to effectively render judgment, whatever that entails, knowing the halacha, knowing how people work, knowing how to analyze evidence, all of those darchei ha-mishpat that Meiri is talking about are another responsibility of judges. So there's a moral responsibility as well as an intellectual responsibility. If those were both lived up to, I think the Mizmor is suggesting going to Pasuk Vav, that would make you basically like Elohim. Ani amarti Elohim atem uvnei alyon kulchem. I said you were basically divine, right? You would have earned the term Elohim, which is what they're called in Sefer Shemot and elsewhere in the Torah. That appellation, to call a judge an Elohim, means I consider you to be almost divine. Why do you call a judge Elohim? Partially because they have authority, and when you're exercising that authority properly, you are almost like a god, metaphorically speaking. You are B'nai Elyon, you are sons of the One on High. But because you failed to do so, you have been blinded or blinded yourselves, Achein ke'adam timutun, you will die like Adam, meaning, I think, generic humanity. Some Midrashim focus on Adam, like Adam HaRishon, who also, you know, sinned and therefore was sentenced to non-immortality. Ucha achad hasarim tipolu, and fall like one of the princes. That sounds kind of interesting. I don't know why we'd say princes here. It might be that it's very hard to imagine someone on a very high rung of society falling to being a nothing. But starting from a high rung of society to a slightly lower rung of society is a little bit easier to imagine. So you might call them a prince. Usually you would say sarim in the sense as a positive term. Here it seems to be a step down from where you could have been. You could have been a god. Now you're a mere mortal. And though you have power in this world, you will eventually die and be judged in the next world. And after the judges have failed, you know, as conclusively as they have, so now, and now, no matter what you say, we're no longer, it's no longer God talking. Clearly, this is the the poet speaking here. As a tefillah, kuma Elokim shavta ha'aretz. Come judge the earth. And then a very funny pasuk at the end. Ki atat tinchal b'chol ha'goyim. You will inherit among all the nations, or maybe you are the inheritance of all the nations. It's not exactly clear what relevance that has to the earlier parts of the Mizmor. Some of the Rishonim suggest that, Hashem, you are the being to whom all the afflicted of society turn, not only among the Jewish people, but among all the nations. And so you have a global or universal responsibility to those people who come to you for help, right? Throughout the world, Mishpat is a responsibility not only for Am Yisrael, but also for B'nai Noach. One of the seven mitzvot B'nai Noach is dinin, is having a legal system to function. And so Hashem is responsible for supporting that. You may also have a sense that Hashem is powerful enough to, meaning unlike these frail mortal judges with their intellectual failures and their moral failures who will die just like everyone else. You could talk to the real Elohim, who's really able to exact judgment, and he has dominion over the earth in a way that these mere mortals do not. Which I think maybe the sort of crescendo of this is more to talk about Hashem as taking over this responsibility. He was among the judges, he watched them fail, and so he must remain standing and take over that burden of exacting and implementing justice. I think putting all this together, we're ready to look at a final theory as to what this Mizmor has to do with Tuesdays, or what has to do with Yom Shlishi, the day of the creation of the earth. There's a sort of continued motif throughout Chazal in many different places. I quoted a couple here, sources 12 and 13, that properly executed and implemented justice is essential to the existence of the world and of human society in that world in particular. So I quoted one Mishnah in Avot for you earlier today, But at the end of that first paragraph of Avot, there's another Mishnah that deals with the same theme. Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omid. But what are those three things? Not Torah, Avodah, Gemilut Chasadim, but rather Al ha'din, Val ha'emet, Val ha'shalom. It is justice, truth, and peace that are the foundations of the world. Now, how do you explain that there should be, really there should be six things on which the world stands, those three and those three? So that would be, if we were learning Perkei Avot together, we would talk about that. But we have the sense, clearly, that the foundations of the earth are lie on din, lie on justice. Similarly, the Gemara on Shabbos tells us, kol dayan tadan din emet l'amito, any judge who judges truthfully, afilu sha achat, even just once, he is a partner with God in the creation of the world. That's a very high praise, and it's also a very specific praise. It's not, oh, he's a ben olam haba, right? That's a very generic, like if I want to say that someone did a great thing, he earned a lot of olam haba, he got, you know, a lot of mitzvah points. No, he is a creator of the world, seemingly because enacting justice properly is a necessary precondition for the world functioning well. It also connects us back to Ma'aseh Bereishit and the divinity piece, right? We call them Elohim because they have a creative force. They're involved in sustaining and creating a world on top of the world that Hashem created. Hashem created a physical earth and created some of humanity, and we continue that act of creation by creating a stable, flourishing society as the pinnacle of what it means to inhabit a world as in the one we have. Rav Hirsch here in this very nice passage sort of outlines the integral nature of justice as foundational for human society. I'll start, let's say, with the third sentence here at the very end of the third line, beginning of the sentence. There is nothing that reveals God to the straight-thinking man more clearly as the founder and maintainer of human society than the sense of justice which was ingrained into the spirit and conscience of man at the time of creation. So we focus on creation here. We focus on how justice is essential to that creation and essential to those human beings who are part of the creation. And this internal sense of justice that we possess is part of our role as perpetuators of that creation. It is in this sense of justice which should be enforced by the sentence of the judges and should become the correct, the rightful order in all interpersonal relationships, as well as in those dealings of the individual with the community and those of the community with the individual. This innate sense of justice represents the will of God concerning the shaping of human affairs, and every court of justice is appointed to proclaim and to enforce this right, must look upon itself as a dat kel, a congregation of God, a group that has a part in God's scheme of things, and which to the best of its power and understanding must not allow itself to be led by any other motive save the pure perception of justice. So, Rav Hirsch in particular is emphasizing this notion of the judges as participating and partnering with God as a member of the Adat Kel, explaining again that language from the very beginning of the Mizmor, and building on this theme, Maharshal on that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah suggests this connotation for the Mizmor. Shehamishpat hu kiyumo shel olam. It preserves the world. Milahavi mabul lechasot haaretz, which protects the world from the mabul. Because one, as the Maharshal will emphasize in just a second, the sin that was responsible for causing the mabul, at least the, you know, in the simple reading of the psukim, is corruption in interpersonal society. V'timalei ha'aretz chamas. V'zeh she'amar ad matai tishpetu avel. If you judge wickedly or crookedly, then you'll lehavi shuv mabul la'olam she'nechtam al kach. Ki dechtiv kimalei ha'aretz chamas. The world was judged and decided to be recreated in the time of the mabul because of failures of justice. And so, and it was in a very visual way, it fits very nicely with creation. The physical earth was created on day three. When justice fails that earth, the mabul comes. We undo the day three of creation and turn it back into day two, a world that is completely submerged under tumultuous waters, because the earth can only survive when properly instituted on this foundation of justice. And so, you know, coming full circle back to where we started, the Mizmor for day three commemorating the creation of the earth acknowledges the importance of the creation of the earth and emphasizes our responsibility continuing it as purveyors of proper justice in the world. And I think perhaps Rav Hirsch might suggest, That we could go a step further and say we're not only speaking to judges, but speaking to society at large, and especially if we expand the purview of judges from the deliberative proceedings to broader fairness and protection of those in need, I think we could expand that to our own understanding of our role in the world, not as beneficiaries of a world, but also as members who are responsible for preserving it, preserving the justice and fairness that's meant to characterize the world at large. So with that, I think that completes the main thesis of the shiur. I have to make one other observation, just because it's very worthwhile to note about this mizmor that may fit into a broader perspective that Chazal have. So I told you that Elokim Yitzav Ba'adat Kel, Bekerav Elokim Yishpot, men judges. That seems to be the majority view, pretty much among all classical commentaries. But you do have the view of Meir, of Ibn Ezra, in source number 7. What is Kerav Elokim? Bottom of page 2, or the English on top of page 3. Hem ha-malachim, shehem ha-elokim utzva ha-shamayim, b'nei el-ha-elokim. They are the angels who are considered Elokim, and the celestial bodies, the Tzva HaShemayim, who are Bnei HaElokim, ki al yedei ha-malachim, heim kol mishpat Elokim ba'aretz. Because the angels, or these divine beings that sort of exist with God, are responsible for perpetuating justice on earth and for propagating it. So if we have that reading, certain elements of the Mizmor work very nicely. If we focus on Hashem not speaking to earthly judges, but to the other forces that are involved in Hashem's running the world. For example, we could talk about Psukim Vav and Zayin, which I think worked very well. If we're talking about Elohim, not in the sense of human judges, but in the sense of divine judges, right, in what Chazal sometimes refer to as Pamalia Shalmala or Beitin Shalmala, this, a heavenly court, so then it makes a lot of sense to say, Ani amarti Elokim atem uvnei Elohim kulchem. I thought you were not metaphorically divine, but literally divine. I thought you were representing me well in the world and fulfilling the mission that I have for the world through you. And then there's almost a sense of them sort of falling from grace, so to speak. Achin ka'adam timutun ucha chadasarim tipolu. You fall like humans. You thought you were immortal, and you should have been immortal. Right? That was your job. But in reality, you failed to live up to that. And if you're not going to perpetuate justice in the world as I expect you to, as my messengers, then we'll, be gone with you, we'll toss you out, and I, Hashem, will personally take over that responsibility. It also fits well with Ki Atat Nechal B'chol HaGoyim, because we have this notion in Midrashim that each nation in the world has their own Tsar. We're talking about Tsar Shel Esav as being who Yaakov wrestles with just in recent Parshiot. And you have plenty of other examples like that, about different nations having their own representatives. And again, if those representatives of those nations aren't handling things well, Hashem, atatim chal b'chol agoyim, you can take over. It doesn't have to be that you're going to let other nations and their sort of wicked mazalot, perpetuate wickedness in the world. You can take over and yourself be an agent of justice directly. And that's what we're praying for, in some sense, in the end of this mizmor as well. Okay, with that, I think we'll